Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Hey friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between. Hey friends, and welcome to another episode of the Happy Hour. I'm your host, Jamie, and as always, I'm really glad that you have decided to join us today. Today's show is fun for me because I'm talking to a founder of an organization, and I just always love to hear how things started. I want to know, where'd you get the information? Where'd the passion come from? How'd you do this? All the things. And this organization is one that I have been curious about for a while. Here's how I heard about this organization. Longtime listeners, do you remember my friend Shruthi Parker? She's been on the show before. She was here in 2019, so not that long ago, actually, episode number 236. She shares her story about how she came to know Jesus. Well, Shruthi has been sharing about the Invisible Girl Project, and so I have become curious about it. Today, I'm sitting down with the co-founder and president of the Invisible Girl Project, Jill McElyea. Their whole purpose in India is to end gendercide, which is the killing of girls in India. In fact, she tells us today about how many millions of women and girls are missing from India. It is a staggering statistic that is going to cause you to stop in your tracks and think about this. I want to give you a little bit of warning going into the show. The work she does is hard. The work she does is working with, like we just said, the gendercide, the killing of girls, the abuse of girls and women in this country. And so I want to let you know there's going to be some hard stories. And if that is something that would be hard for you, we give you all the permission in the world, and you never need my permission, but we give you permission to skip out on this episode. I loved meeting Jill today. She came into the office and recorded this with me here in Austin. I loved meeting her and hearing her story of how she was a lawyer and she wanted to work with justice, and she ended up in India with IJM, and she met her husband and all the things, and she tells us the whole story, which I know there's a million more things she did not tell us about. But today's episode is going to be one that makes you kind of step back and pause. And it's going to make you think, what can I do to be a part of the solution? And so I'm just prayerful that as you listen, that you do find ways that God's asking you to be a part of the solution in this massive problem with women and girls in India. At the end of the episode, Jill tells us all the ways that you can get involved. So stay tuned for her to say that. Don't forget, you guys, we have all of the show notes for you. If you're looking for a link, if we talk about a book you want to know about, if you want to get involved, all of the things are in the show notes, and it's super easy to find. You're listening to episode number 524, so you'll go to jamieivey.com/HH524. I want to let you know that yesterday was the first day of fall, and so we have a big sale in our merch store. The Happy Hour loves selling merch. I love making t-shirts. I love all the things. We're always looking for new ideas. And right now, we are making room for some fall merchandise that's coming to the store soon. So we want to help move some of our short sleeve stuff. So if you go to jamieivey.com/store, use the promo code FALL, you're going to get 20% off anything that is short sleeve. Guys, go over there. Some of them are already on sale. You're going to get some really good deals on some really cute t-shirts. So jamieivey.com/store. Use the promo code FALL and you'll get 20% off. All right, friends, I'm super excited to introduce you to my new friend, co-founder and president of the Invisible Girl Project, Jill McElyea. Jill, welcome to the Happy Hour.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you.
I'm really excited to have you. And I was telling Lindsay this morning, we were talking about our conversation we're about to have, and I just said, I'm so very excited to hear the story of what you have to tell me. So just be ready. I'm like a little kid over here. Like, just tell me all the things. I was driving my daughter to school this morning, and she's a freshman, and honestly, just a little FYI, none of my kids actually really care what's going over here on over here at the happy hour. Like, mom goes to work, I don't know what she's doing. But I was telling her about chatting with you this morning, and I was telling her about some statistics that I had read and all the things, and she was kind of just like, what does that actually even mean? And I just was like, wow, this is just so a conversation that is needed for everyone. So welcome to the happy hour.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. And I love that you're talking about it with your daughter, because I think that there are so many people in the Western world, in the United States, who don't know about the discrimination going on and still continuing in India. And I think it's important that we learn about it, especially as believers, and that we share it with our children.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, I'll just be honest up front. I didn't know a lot about this and still feel very uneducated about it. But we'll probably get to this later. We have a mutual friend, Shruti Parker, who's been on the show before and is on your board. And she shares about it. And that's where my information has come from. And that's where I learned about you and your organization. So before we dive into all the details, because I want to hear how it all started. I want to hear how we can help. I want to hear what's going on. I want to hear everything. Great. I want you just to introduce your organization and tell us what you run and what y'all are doing.
Okay. So I'm a co-founder and president of Invisible Girl Project, and we save girls' lives to end the atrocity of female gendercide in India. Gendercide is like taken from the word genocide, right?
Yeah, it was a new word for me.
Yeah.
Is it a new word?
No, I mean, it's been around for a while, but I think that, you know, people aren't as familiar with it. We all have heard of genocides, but this is gendercide. So it's the systematic killing of females. And we see it played out in India with the systematic discrimination and killing of little girls just because they're female. So we're fighting that.
It makes me think the only knowledge, or the only thing that I can relate this to, and I want you to tell me if I'm right or wrong or off base here, is kind of what we've heard about before in China with them not only having one child and not wanting girls. Is there same, different, anything alike?
It's very similar.
Okay.
So, and I often when I speak about this, I talk about, hey, we've heard about this happening in China.
Right.
We don't know about this happening in India. Yeah. It's less broadcast here in the Western world. And I don't know if that's because, you know, India is a great ally. It's the largest democracy in the whole world. So I'm not really sure why, but the statistics are really the same. There are 37 million, according to the 2011 Indian census, 37 million more men than women in India.
Wow.
And the numbers in China are very similar.
Wow.
So we all know about it happening in China, and people want to rise up and do something about it. And fortunately, you know, the one-child policy has been affected. I mean, it still really kind of exists because you have the two-child policy. I have a great friend who fights that. Her name's Reggie Littlejohn, and she's been doing this work in China for a long time. Yeah. She's really a mentor to me. But people don't know about it happening in India. And it plays out very differently in India because the laws are actually in place to protect girl children versus the laws in China that restrict the lives and the right to have as many children as you want. But in India, the laws are there to protect girls. So for example, if you're pregnant, you can't find out whether you're having a boy or girl legally. It's illegal to find out.
Wow. No gender reveal parties happening.
No gender reveal parties happening. And we had lived, my husband Brad and I had lived in India before we came back to the States and before we started having babies of our own. And so I remember when I was pregnant with our first one, who is, we have two little girls, and our friends in India were like messaging back and forth. They're like, are you going to find out? Or are you going to do it the Indian way?
Yeah.
And we actually did it, quote unquote, the Indian way. Yeah. We waited to find out whether we were having a boy or girl. So it's illegal in India. The laws are in place because they recognize that there is this discrimination, this systematic discrimination against girls, and they're trying to prevent that. But it's been going on for so long, and it's really become an accepted part of the culture. Now, that's not to say, I mean, there are amazing Indians that are fighting this and that recognize that this is a huge problem in their culture and they want to fix it. And so it's not everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's important that we say that.
Right.
Because what we do as Invisible Girl Project, we are not these Westerners that have come in and said, India, you have a problem that we figured out. We're here to fix it by any means.
Yeah.
that's really important to us. And that's always been one of our core values, that we're here to come alongside Indians who are doing great work to rescue girls and to change the culture from within. And we want to help them do that.
And just a side note for listeners, if you're wanting to support any organization, look for who is doing the work there. Is it full of Westerners that have moved in and taking over and bringing in their ideas? Or are you linking arms and partnering with locals?
Yeah.
And I love hearing that about you guys. So that's a little note to you guys listening.
And I loved hearing you. I love hearing you say that because it's so important.
Yeah, it's very important.
It is crucial. And
for sustainability, for accountability, for all the lasting change is so important. Yeah.
Good.
Yay. Okay. So I want to go all the way back, because what I do know is that you ended up in India with IJM, which we're big IJM supporters over here at the Happy Hour. We love the stuff they're doing. So take me back to Jill pre-Brad, to pre-Invisible Girl Project. What took a single young woman to India?
So I had been practicing law. I'm a lawyer and have been doing criminal law and had a private practice at that point doing criminal defense work, really for children primarily, up in Northwest Indiana outside Chicago. And I also love to sing, though, and I helped lead worship at a really big church up in Granger, Indiana. And one of my pastors there at the time said he had been to some conference, and he said, I heard this guy speaking, and it's you. It's like, it's everything about you. It's justice, and yet it's helping people, and it's ministry, in essence. And he's like, you got to check out, and he gave me this CD that he burned of Gary Haugen speaking. And I remember it was over Thanksgiving break. I was driving from Indiana to my parents' house in Kansas City. That's where I grew up. And I just listened to Gary Haugen speak at this conference on CD, back when we had CD players.
I know.
And I just wept. I wept. I was like, oh my goodness, it is. This is justice. This is standing up for the poor. This is everything that just makes me, which, by the way, I'm an 8 on the Enneagram.
I love it.
So,
And Gary Haugen is president of International Justice Mission, IJM.
That's right. And he was the founder. And it's grown so much, of course, since then. That was in, I think, like 2007-ish. Yeah. So I ended up going online, long story short. Over the course of the next year, I applied to IJM, really started investigating what it was all about. And I was hired by IJM in the fall of 2007 to go live in India, in Chennai, India, and work there as the director of the legal team and as the deputy director of the office in Chennai, which really works with government officials there.
I was going to say, explain real quick what IJM lawyers would be doing.
So we work with government officials. We would come alongside them to explain the laws and to help them do their jobs in enforcing the laws. And so so it was just a really wonderful opportunity. And of course, again, I had this history of like prosecution and then defense work. So I loved being in the courtroom, and I loved to be able to work with lawyers and teach them how to prosecute what was bonded labor slavery cases. Yep. So I knew that was like, so 2007, I knew that that's what I would be doing if I accepted the job with IJM. I had just planned through my church in Indianapolis, I was living in Indianapolis at the time, to go on a trip to India. And we were going to serve at an orphanage there. And it was about a month and a half before I was supposed to move to India. And so I thought, okay, I was signed up for this anyway. I'm going to check India out to see if I can do this. And again, I was single at the time, and I really thought, I'm never going
to
be married for the rest of my life.
Are you about to tell me that you met your husband on this trip?
I did.
Oh my gosh. I totally spoiled the lead, but I'm like,
you did.
I feel like I know where this is going, and I can't even believe it.
You knew it. So we went to the same church in Indianapolis. Again, I led worship there at that church too, and we never met at church. I don't know that he ever was at the services that I led or anything, which is really funny. So we are on this trip to India, literally a month and a half before I am supposed to move to India, and we met. But I didn't even think about him that way at the time.
Okay.
Because I thought he was great. I mean, he was so good with the kids. Yeah. And he was such a cool guy. And his testimony was so similar to mine. And just coming from, I mean, we both came from Christian homes, but we had been through things in life that were really hard. And so that was it. So I didn't like keep in touch with him or anything. Like I picked up, I moved to India in January of 2008.
Okay.
Took my job with IJM. And I remember, of course, just first landing there by myself. Yeah. Here I am. A single woman calling my parents after I arrived. And it's like, you know, in the middle of the night when you get there, and just crying and being like, what did I do?
Yeah.
But it was what the Lord totally had because, I mean, our story could be really long and I'll make it short.
Yeah.
But after I had lived there for a while, I was asked to come back and speak at IJM's Global Prayer Gathering. And this would have been in 2008. And so I had been on the field doing the work for a couple months. And in April of 2008, I came back and spoke at the GPG for IJM, and Brad came to the GPG
to see you.
Well, he was coming with like our whole team that was supposed
to. You were the added bonus.
I just, you know, I let them know, hey guys, it'd be so great. We all went to India. You loved India. Like, come see what IJM is doing. And at the last minute, everybody else flaked and didn't come. And he had already booked his ticket and all those things. And he came. And I remember he, like, we had just emailed a couple times in India, but he was like, I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. I'm coming like by myself. Yeah. Is this weird? And I was like, meh, you always make me feel uncomfortable. Yeah. So it's no big deal. You know, he loved that sass.
Yeah.
So, so anyway, he came to the Global Prayer Gathering. My parents were there. They met. I mean, that weekend we were like, it doesn't matter that I'm on the other side of the world. We're going to date long distance.
Yeah.
It just was really clear to us. Yeah. And so we dated. And back in those days, we had Skype.
Yep.
We didn't have smartphones.
Yep.
So we got to know each other so well while I was living in India and he was living in Indianapolis.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, you just see the hand of God so clearly, not only in our meeting, but at the time, he's a pharmacist by profession. He was working as an overnight pharmacist.
Wow. And y'all could, so they had the right hours.
That's right. So we would both get off work at the same time. We'd talk, we'd fall asleep. He'd go, we'd go back into work at the same time. I mean, just little details like that.
That's so beautiful.
And God is just truly a God of details. And just,
I love it. So you and Brad meet fall in love and get married. I want to hear when you guys decided to start the Invisible Girl Project.
Yes.
I want to hear, how did that come about? And then also just, I really want to know, you explained a little bit in the beginning about what this looks like in India, but what are girls facing daily in their lives in India?
Mm-hmm. So at the end of 2008, so I had just been in India for like that whole year kind of by myself, and Brad and I got married at the end of 2008 back in the US, and then he took a sabbatical for work and came over to India, and our first year of marriage, here we are newlyweds living in Chennai, India. And we went back, it was like early January 2009 after we got married and our honeymoon, and so I'm there going to work every day and he's on sabbatical. Mm. And so he had started volunteering and kind of finding things to do. And there were some friends who were going to do an exploratory trip in South India just to kind of, we'd heard rumors about like issues that were going on with girls there. Didn't really know what was truthful, or, I mean, the things we heard were crazy, like just that baby girls when they were born were being drowned. And it was so unfathomable to us. So we had friends, Indians, and a couple Americans were going to go see what they could find out.
Yeah.
And they asked Brad to go. I'm like, oh, go, honey.
Yeah.
You should. I got to go to work. Go see India. Get on your first train, travel. And so they did. They took an overnight train to South India, and we're out in some really remote villages. And it was in one of these villages that Brad met a family that wanted desperately to have a son. And so years before Brad ever met this family, the mom got pregnant in hopes of having a son. And again, couldn't find out whether she was having a boy or girl because it's illegal. And I don't even know if the technology would have been available to her at the time because she's living in remote South India. And it would have been at least 20 years before Brad met her. And so she hoped to have a son. She got pregnant, and you know, when I think about this and having a child of my own or children of my own, I think about, you know, the first time I got pregnant and feeling the baby kick for the first time and feeling so sick and just all the things that come with pregnancy. And I imagine what she went through, right? And the bonding she may have felt with her baby. And then after having a healthy pregnancy and giving birth 9 months later, she delivered a baby girl. And at the birth of her daughter, there was no celebration because it wasn't the desired son. And so this woman and her husband killed their own daughter. And again, she hoped to have a son. So she got pregnant again and had another healthy pregnancy, you know, went through all the things that a pregnancy brings. And at the end of the 9 months, had another healthy baby girl. Mm-hmm. And they killed that daughter. This mother and father did that to 11 of their baby girls. They killed all 11 of their daughters upon their birth just because they're girls. And they wanted a son. And so Brad hears this story when he's in this remote village of South India. He actually met their 12th daughter, who they let live. So
for what reason?
And we just figure, like, maybe they realized they were never going to have a son. So here's this 12th daughter, Asha. And they decided to let her live. Well, she told Brad her story, that she knew that her whole life she was unwanted, that her parents had killed all 11 of her sisters. Yeah. And he was just dumbstruck, to be honest.
Yeah.
And here she was, a 21-year-old woman, standing in front of him, telling him her story. And she had just had a baby girl of her own. Mm. But she was going to let that baby girl live. And Brad got to be part of her naming ceremony. And that's so special in India. It really legitimizes the baby's birth. And so Brad was in this village, part of the naming ceremony of this little girl, hearing Asha's story. And so he took the train back from South India to our little apartment here we are in Chennai. And I just remember we're sitting at our kitchen table. I'd gotten off work. He had gotten back. And I'm just looking at him from across the table. And we had, you know, I just remember the cold marble under my feet and the whir of the fan overhead. And looking at my sweet husband, you know, we'd been married like 3 weeks at this point, with tears in his eyes, sharing the story of the reality of what was happening to girls. And we just knew we had to do something. We didn't know what it was going to be. We didn't even really dream about starting Invisible Girl Project, but that's the day that we say it was birth, because that's the day that the dream really came in our minds that now that we know about this, we have to do something.
So that was in 2009.
In January 2009.
I mean, you said he was dumbstruck. I feel dumbstruck and have birthed a child and then have three through adoption. And just that, I can't even fathom. It's not even that I can't even fathom that they killed their children. I can't even fathom that the mom thought this would be a good idea. That just feels to me like cultural bondage, even, you know, that this would be a part of what we do. It's very, very sad. Okay, so you guys decided you're going to start this organization. And so starting an organization is not for the weak. it is a big deal, and you're still working for IJM and you're doing this, and Brad's on sabbatical and all the things. I kind of want to jump forward a little bit and just hear, what are you guys doing? How are you being a part of the solution for this problem, and what does it look like? And I'm very intrigued with the fact that you told me earlier that India is very well aware of this problem. And so I think I'm just curious as to, I'm going to ask a very dumb question. Why is it still happening? And I think I know the answer, but I want you to tell me that as well. So tell me, guys, what you guys are doing, what's the solution, and then why is it still happening?
So in 2009, you know, we lived there our whole first year of marriage and really studied this issue. So we learned about female infanticide, that that's just one of the ways that girls are discriminated against in deadly ways that has led to 37 million more men than women in the, in the population. We also learned about female feticide, which is sex-selective abortion. And it's illegal, as I mentioned, but it's still happening. And so you can bribe an ultrasound technician to tell you whether you're having a boy or girl and then go have an abortion illegally. The laws in India do not provide for abortion basically on demand. And so having an abortion, knowing that you're having a baby girl, is illegal.
But so abortions are legal.
Abortions are legal, but just not
for that reason.
For that reason. Yeah, got it. Exactly. So we learned about that. We learned about little girls who are neglected just because they're girls. And so families who, if they have a son and have a daughter, and if they're poor and not everybody can eat, the daughter's going to be the last one to eat.
Yeah.
And so we just really studied this issue because we wanted to know more. And then over the course of that year, we got to meet wonderful Indians who were doing fantastic work, but just needed their capacity increased.
On this issue. With this,
on this issue. Yes. People who had safe homes where they had rescued little girls. People who were advocating against this. You know, and so we really knew early on, I think because we lived there, it was super helpful. Just first of all, we loved India. Mm-hmm. It felt like home to us. We still love India. We have people there who are like our family. Yeah. We love the Indian culture. And so again, it was important for us not to come in and be like, hey, we're here to fix this.
Yeah.
So we knew we wanted to help the Indians who are already doing great work. And so we ended up at the end of 2009, early 2010, moving back to the States, kind of figuring out how we could start an organization, not really knowing what that looked like, but knowing that we wanted to partner with Indians.
Yeah.
And so Invisible Girl Project was birthed. We became 501c3 and recognized by the IRS in 2011. Mm-hmm. So we had our official 10th birthday last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so we've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
And we started out small, just partnering with a couple of the organizations that, you know, we got to know really well while we lived there. And we've grown.
That's awesome.
And right now we have 9 different partner organizations that are located across India. And it's important that we have these partners spread all over because they are the people who are on the ground. They're the community-based organizations who are doing the rescue work. And so one of the pillars of Invisible Girl Project is our RICE program. And it stands for Rescue, Intervention, Care, and Empowerment. And so through our partner organizations, we're rescuing vulnerable little girls. So it makes us different from other organizations like an IJM or Rahab's Rope or other organizations that are on the ground and rescuing girls and women from brothels is we want to prevent that from happening.
Because one of my big questions was I would see a lot of this leading into sex trafficking.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're saying we want to come in pre-
Yes.
We don't want to rescue them out of the brothel. We want to rescue them from ever getting into the brothel.
That's right. Got because it. Think of the trauma that these girls and women suffer. And we know that once a girl goes, quote unquote, missing because she's trafficked into a brothel or she's trafficked as a child bride, like her life is in danger.
Yeah.
You might never hear from her again.
Yeah.
And the statistics show, and one of the stats is just crazy. Years ago, the United Nations estimated that there were 50 million girls and women who were missing from India's population. That number's increased. It's actually 63 million now. And the India Economic Survey in 2018 said it's 63 million girls and women who are missing.
What does that mean, missing? I mean, I know what a missing person is. Mm-hmm. I know those things. But how are 63 million people, women, girls, missing?
They've been killed. They've been trafficked. They may have been, like, their births were recorded and then
nothing
all of a sudden,
ever. Yeah.
That they're just gone. And when that happens, then you have a population of many more men than women.
Yep, which you already said is true.
Yes, yeah. And then you have extreme violence. Mm. So cases where, of course, you have 37 million more men than women, men who will not ever be married.
Yep.
And so, yes, girls are trafficked into brothels. They're trafficked as child brides. There, studies show that in cultures where there are so many more men than women, there is higher rates of violence against girls and women. And we've seen that in India, too. I mean, you see the case of Nirbhaya that was the young medical student years ago who was on a bus in Delhi and had tragic things happen to her. Mm. So you see stories of like that happening. And so we want to prevent those things from happening. And so we go upstream as an organization by having community-based organizations discover what the problem is that girls are facing in their communities.
Mm.
And they help rescue girls from those situations. So that's what rescue really means to us.
Yeah.
It's preventing those awful, atrocious things from happening to these girls.
You're like rescuing them from the possibility.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is
exactly
great, great work. I mean, it's what we see in like under-resourced neighborhoods here in America where people come in and try to rescue, to use your word, from them ending up uneducated or going into the system or whatever. So I love it, love it, love it. Okay, I.
Intervention.
Intervention.
So if we need to intervene legally, if someone has harmed a girl, we will work with local attorneys and work with our partners to prosecute people. Mm. Or to, if we have to rescue a girl from a situation, we'll work with the law to do that, with the government officials to do that. So that's the I. C is really care. It's aftercare. It's providing that trauma-based counseling. It's providing the girl's needs. Mm. We have a child sponsorship program. And so through our child sponsorship program, someone here can sponsor a little girl and help meet those needs in our aftercare program. And that means also sending her to school, making sure that she has shoes and clothes. Yeah. And so we don't just rescue. We don't stop there, because we know that we need to care for these girls long term, because not only in caring for them and ensuring they're educated, we want to change the mindset that they are invisible.
Right.
We want them to be seen, and we want that first to happen in their minds. Mm. We want these girls to be change agents in their cultures, in their communities and in their culture. And so that's what we are trying to do. So that's the C, that's care, and then empowerment as well. Empowerment fits in there. Education, and also teaching them how to be empowered to fight female gendercide in their families and their communities when they're grownups.
I love it. Every organization I've ever met with, gone on trips with, seen the work that they do, will all tell you that when you empower women, you change a community. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a beautiful thing, because we're women, you and I, and I got mostly women listeners. And it is true that there is this power that women have that maybe they don't know, they've never been told, or maybe they just literally can't exhibit it because of their culture. But women can change a community, and that community can change an area, and that area can change. And it's just like a ripple effect, which I know that's what you're going for. So many people will be listening to this and think, that's terrible. I mean, that's awful. I mean, even me, as I was prepping for this interview with you, was just like, this is what? Like, this is terrible. But then we move on.
Right.
You know, and we're all guilty of this, all of us. Why does this matter to anyone here living in Texas, Kansas City, North Carolina, Nebraska, anyone here in the North America? Why does this matter to us?
Well, as believers, it should matter, right? Because our God is a God of justice. I remember being young and just praying and asking the Lord, what do you want me to do with my life? Micah 6:8 is really clear. He has shown thee, O man, what is good and what the Lord requires. What does he require of us? But to do justice and to love mercy and walk humbly with him. This is a grave injustice. And girls and women on the other side of the globe are going through this injustice. And God loves them. He loves little girls in India, and he doesn't want this to happen to them. And so we should care about this. We should raise our voices. And I know it's easy to just begin our own lives again and to kind of put it away, because it is tragic. It's hard to think about hard things, right? But we truly believe that when people learn about this issue, because again, so many people don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
That they will be compelled to take action, just like Brad and I were. And we're not saying that people need to go start an organization or do whatever, but like, if this is something that resonates with you, and if you believe the Lord has shown this issue to you and wants you to do something about it, IGP is providing ways for people to do that, to take action and to come alongside us as we rescue little girls' lives and as we fight to change the mindset that girls are invisible, that they're disposable. And so we ask that people not turn a blind eye.
Yeah,
we ask that they just face it head on and come alongside us.
Come alongside you. What does that look like? Because I know that you would definitely take anyone's money any day, write all the big checks. But there's other ways too. What does it look like to come alongside you guys?
Sure. So we have a lot of opportunities for so many ages. So I have like two little girls, 8 and 11, and they have lemonade stands. Aww. And literally, get, you know, $11 on a hot summer day in change. And we have a new program called Change for Change. Like, we are making change agents in India. We are changing lives. And we want these young girls who we've rescued to change their culture. And so we're asking, like, for little kids. Like, we all, I know there's been a change shortage. Hey, let's all gather the change that is under our couch, in our couch cushions.
Is it
really
a change shortage? I don't even know about this.
Yeah. So, like, you go, well, I know I've seen, like, a convenience store.
My daughter asked me for nickels this morning. And I literally was like, what are we doing? Why do we need nickels? Like, what's going on? Like, you don't want a quarter?
Seriously.
She needed to print something at school. And I was like, I don't know if I have a nickel.
I know. Who has nickels anymore?
Yeah.
But it's true. I guarantee if we, like, look in our cars or, and there, I've just seen, like, in convenience stores, like, we're out of change,
right?
Yes. So, okay, so let's all turn our change in.
Yeah.
Let's cash it in, and little kids can work for little girls in India by submitting their change or take it to the bank and sending what they can to IGP, because that will affect a little girl's life.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen for $60 a year, I mean, $60 for a whole year pays for a girl to go to school.
Wow.
That's it, $60. And so, so that's what my little girls work for every time they have a lemonade stand.
Yeah.
So change for change. We want to make change in India. We want change agents. And so, hey, give us your change, please.
I love it. I love it.
But besides money, right, there are ways to advocate and to raise your voice. Mm. So in 2013, like, IGP, again, was just a new organization. But I had the opportunity to speak before Congress on this issue. And I testified just about the issue of India's missing girls. They heard about us because someone raised their voice to their elected official and said, you need to hear about this issue. Mm. And so they invited me so that I could talk about it, right?
Yeah.
So there are ways. And if you go on our website, which is invisiblegirlproject.org, invisiblegirlproject, all one word, .org, you can see ways to get involved. And one of them is really becoming an advocate. Mm. And it is you're volunteering your time to raise awareness about this issue so that we can help make a big change. And then one other way, I mean, again, people don't know about it. So one of our pillars is raising global awareness. And we do that through social media and through Instagram, Invisible Girl Project, Facebook, Invisible Girl Project, Twitter, LinkedIn. I mean, we ask that you follow us and then you share, because if you share with five people who've never heard about it and they share with five people, we can really make a movement to fight this issue together. And part of what we do is we really want to be bridge builders. We want to lock arms with as many people as possible to help save our sisters in India.
I love it. And I was going to say, that's how I found out about you guys. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned it earlier, is through Shruti Parker, mm-hmm. who's been on the show. And I learned about it by her sharing on social mm-hmm. media. And so I think that is a very under thought about way to be an advocate mm-hmm. for something, because we're all on it, mm-hmm. you know? And so share things that you see. I'm talking to you, the listener. If you follow Invisible Girl Project, share what you see, because it is really eye-opening to so many people. And you're going to have people go, I never knew this was happening. Mm-hmm. I never knew this was happening. Mm-hmm. How do you guys work alongside the government? Is the government mm-hmm. happy about what you guys are doing?
So yes.
Okay.
The government actually started a campaign years ago, and it was through Prime Minister Modi, that's called Save the Girl, Educate the Girl. And I won't try and say it in Hindi, even though I can. I botch it every time. And the government really wants this to change. They want mindsets to change. They want girls to have an opportunity. I think the government absolutely recognizes that women can help change this issue and this and the culture. And so, again, the laws are in place, and the government, all the way up from the Prime Minister to the Supreme Court of India, wants the states to really enforce these laws. And so what we do, so another pillar of what IGP does is we have our teaching and transforming program. So on the very small level with our partners, we have, you know, we're in nine different places finding out what the issues are. We rescue girls there. But on kind of a macro level, we have our teaching and transforming program. And this is where our Indians who work for us, our staff there, go around and speak to government officials, speak to stakeholders, speak to students at colleges and universities to raise further awareness about this issue and get them on board so that they'll be change agents. And so in working with the government, we've found a lot of success.
Wow. It makes me think that this would be, if you just grew up and this is all you knew, mm-hmm. and I mean, it's hard because there's like a morality thing of just like, how is this okay, even if you don't follow Jesus, you know, it just feels like a little out there. But if you just grew up and all you knew, the teaching and training would be so important because you'd be like, oh, this is just what I've known.
Right.
Oh, you mean that we shouldn't do this? Like, this is not okay? Is this more often in like rural areas, or are we seeing this in like big cities as well?
So it's all over. It's all over. And it just presents differently. Mm-hmm. So in bigger cities, you have more opportunity for sex selective abortion because the technology is there.
Because you have access.
You have access. In rural places, it might be child marriage, you know, marrying off a 12-year-old little girl. So one little girl I met, her name's Alia, and she's one of our rescued girls. Yeah. And on a trip a couple years ago, Alia and I just sat down together and she told me her story. And it was that her parents wanted to marry her off. And Alia was a really good student. Yeah. And she just had dreams. Mm-hmm. And even though she'd been kind of discriminated against, she still had the opportunity to go to school. And she is really smart. And she knew her parents wanted to marry her off shortly after, like, she became 12 years old. She had heard about our partner's work. And so one night she left home before they could marry her off, and she walked 8 miles barefoot to go find IGP's partner.
Wow.
And when she found us, she said, please, please, will you help me? I just want to go to school. And so she became one of our rescued girls at that time. We were able to find her family, talk to them, counsel them, but we put Alia in a safe home so that her life wouldn't be in jeopardy. And in that area where that partner does work, we see that child marriage is a huge issue there. And so child marriage in the rural areas is a big, big thing. And it's illegal. Again,
is it just like we need to get her out from under our house, or do we get money for this?
Both. Well, they don't have to pay money if she's super young. So dowry still exists in India, and it's the woman's family who pays the dowry.
I see. Mm-hmm. I got it.
So the woman's family pays the dowry to the husband's family. And so if you're poor and you know you got to marry your daughter off.
Get her out of there sooner.
So if you get her out of there sooner, you have less dowry to pay, or maybe none at all.
Yeah.
If she's young. And so a family sees their daughter as a burden, knowing that they're going to have to pay dowry. And so, you know, what we do then in our Teaching and Transforming program is we ask people to stand up against dowry because it is illegal. Yeah. And it's been something, again, that's just happened, even though it's illegal. So we ask people to take the pledge that they will not take dowry for their son. They will not give dowry for their daughter, that they will do that for themselves, and so that they can show that girls should be treated as equals. Yeah. And that dowry, which perpetuates this problem, must end.
Oh, Jill, I'm just like so in awe of all the amazing work that you guys are doing. And congratulations on 10 years, but it feels like you've been doing it for a lot longer and just a hot minute. I just met you, but I'm sure that you feel that as well. And I'm just so excited for the listeners who are hearing this, who are going to want to be on board with you guys. Now, did I hear that you guys are hiring?
We are.
Okay, you might have somebody listening that wants to work for you guys.
Well, we are always looking for people who love Jesus, who have a heart for justice in girls, and who are leaders who can come alongside us and just dig in. And we're based in Raleigh, North Carolina, so you have to come to Raleigh if you want to work for us.
I mean, remember how you listened to that CD with Gary?
Uh-huh.
Someone's going to be listening to this podcast with you, and they'll be like, I remember I heard about this. I'm moving to Raleigh to work with you guys.
That'd be awesome. Actually, our very last employee that we just hired was living in Tennessee, and she wanted to do that. And so, yeah, we have got an awesome staff of women right now who we love Jesus, and he's why we do this, even though our mission isn't to evangelize. And I just want to be clear on that. Our mission is to save girls' lives, to end female gendercide, which we believe is truly showing the gospel. Yeah. And we know that's what God wants us to do. But we have to be really clear on that. But our faith motivates us. And so so we are believers, and we lift each other up, and we really support each other. And so we have a team of women here, even though we'll hire a guy if you're listening. And we have a team of women in India too. We have 4 staff in India who are doing this and then oversee our partners over there too. So you want to go over to India if you're Indian and you want to go back, hey, send us your resume.
I love it so much. Thank you, Jill.
Hey, thank you, Jamie.
This has been a joy to hear all that you guys are doing. I'd love to hear what you're reading.
Jamie wants to know. Jamie wants to know. We want to know what you're eating.
Oh, okay. Well, shout out to my cousin Scott Drew. Yes, he's my cousin.
Yeah, she just like just dropped that in here earlier today. Well, you should tell him how this all came about because you told me you were a Baylor fan.
Yes, and I'm a huge Baylor basketball fan.
Yes,
basketball to be clear. Uh-huh. And so it's because my cousin is Scott Drew. Our moms are sisters, and we grew up like, you know, our big Italian family, brothers right. and sisters. And so Scott's my cousin.
Oh my
Sick and bears.
I said something really rude to you that I would like to apologize to what? You publicly too. Well, you came in and you're like, I'm a Baylor fan. I said, oh, did you go there? And you said, no. And I said, it's so mean. I said, because I didn't go to Texas and I'm a Texas fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't go there. I said, who's a Baylor fan that didn't go to Baylor? And I apologize about that,
oh,
first of
you
all.
You do not need to apologize.
But I did. The reason I said it is because mm-hmm. Baylor has just had some ups and downs. Yeah. You know, and your cousin has done phenomenal work. Mm-hmm. And how long has
Thank
he been
you.
There?
I mean, he's like 20 years.
Yeah, I was gonna say
so.
Years.
Yeah.
Years and years.
Yeah. So his book, Road to Joy, is so sweet. And actually, he mentions me in there because I set him up with his wife.
Oh,
and so
I love
he
it.
Tells about his wife, Kelly, and how we went to law school together. So Road to Joy is great. And then I'm also reading another book called The Sisters of Makama. And it is so interestingly.
It sounds very interesting.
It is so interesting. I actually saw a tweet about it. There's a podcast where Rainn Wilson, the guy from The uh-huh, Office, uh-huh. and Rez, who his kind of podcast partner, they were talking about white saviorism. And is it ever okay?
Yeah.
And so Rez interviewed a woman named Jyoti Tatum, who works for, I think, like the New York Times. Uh-huh. And she wrote this book about six women who were nuns from Kentucky, never been to India. And in the late 1940s, they just picked up and moved to India. And they changed lives by doing it. So, and it was a great, it was really neat to hear their conversation too. And in this podcast that I listened to, they talked about, it goes back to what we said, like really when, you know, should white people never do anything
right.
to support people of
right.
color? No.
No. Right.
No. But the key is for us not to come in and say, hey, we're yeah. here to fix your problems.
Yeah.
It's for us to lock arms
yeah.
and say, how do you need our help yeah. at all?
And
do you want our help?
And to elevate.
And to elevate.
And to leverage whatever privilege we might be bringing in
Absolutely.
As an American.
Absolutely. You're right.
I love that. Okay. I am going to go on a rabbit trail real quick. I read a book this summer. I'll put the name of it in the show notes. And I believe it took place in India. I'm going to feel real dumb if I'm off here. In light of our conversation, but it was about a woman who, I can't remember which of her family, she was either Muslim or Hindu, mm-hmm. and she married the opposite. Mm-hmm. So there was a religion yeah. clash there. And her brothers, I don't want to spoil the book if anyone reads it, but really took havoc on her mm-hmm. from marrying someone
yes.
who, I believe he was Hindu and she was Muslim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just... Mm-hmm. A great, great book, a very, very sad story. Mm. And I would imagine that is more common than
yeah,
we
is.
Would like to think.
It is. I want to know that book, too.
I'll tell it to you. I'll find it afterwards. Jill, thank you.
Aw, thank you, Jamie.
And go Bears. Sick 'em Bears. I will happily say sick 'em Bears all day long. I told you already, I always cheer for the Bears if they're not playing
thank
Texas.
You.
Always. Hands down. Love those Bears. So
thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's just been a pleasure to be here with you and real honor. And thanks for sharing the word about IGP.
I love it. I'm honored to share this. And you guys, as you're listening, I know you're like, I want to know all the things, but I'm like running or I'm changing diapers or I'm washing dishes while you're listening. Go to the show notes and we're going to have everything there for you. Thank you so much for listening to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. We are truly grateful for every single story that we get to share with you, every encouragement we get to give you, and every opportunity we get to point all of us to Jesus. If you're loving this show, we would really appreciate it if you would leave us a rating and or a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, tell your friends. That is the number one way that people find out about our show. It's because you tell them. Join us right here every Wednesday and Friday for meaningful conversations that will make us think, they'll make us laugh, and they'll always point us back to Jesus. And come find me other places on the internet as well. I love Instagram. I'm over there at Jamie Ivey. And if you've never visited my YouTube page, you're going to want to go there. Have you ever listened to a show and wondered, I wonder what they look like? Well, go find us over there. It's jamieivey.com/YouTube.
The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey is a production of Ivey Media Podcasts. Executive produced by Jamie Ivey,
produced by Lindsay Sweeney, edited by Angie Elkins, show notes by Ashley Miner, art by Jen Jett Barrett, original music by Matt Graham, and I'm your host, Jamie. Have a happy hour with a friend.